Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to bring you Star Center Olympus, Gunnarian Revelations with Lonnie Calvert and Paula Greenwood. Greetings and welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Hello. I heard
Hello.
Someone else's voice in there.
This is Paula. I'm doing great. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear both of you fine. Can you hear me fine? And can you hear each other?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
I've missed you guys. How have you been?
Well, missed you too.
Well, thank
We've
you.
Missed you too. It's been a while, and it's great to be back.
And there's all that stuff going on with Jody and the screening of Welcome Space Brothers. So that's been something we've been involved in.
I can't wait to see that. I have several Unarian-related films and television programs in my library, as well as tons of media produced by Unaria. So I'm looking forward to seeing this as well.
Yes, this is a documentary that was created over years where Jody Willie came to the center for like 8 or 9 or maybe 10 years, interviewing and filming and gathering information from the archives of Unarius. And then in October, it premiered, and she's taking it across the U.S. to film festivals. And it really is a beautiful documentary and a wonderful experience to be there if you can.
I wish I could be there, but I will wait until it trickles down to my area or to my accessibility. But that is incredibly awesome, and I'm very happy for Unarius and all the people involved. And I'm really excited about today's topic, which is dreams. And I'm looking forward to hearing your insights and your answers to a bunch of questions that I prepared.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your answers. You always put in a lot of interesting information that, you know, we don't get to hear all the time.
Yes, very insightful you are.
Thank you, and I will do so tonight. If I have something to say, I'll definitely say it. So let us begin. And I guess we'll do Lonnie and Paula in terms of the order, and this way we can proceed more smoothly. Okay. What exactly is a dream according to the Unarian Revelations?
Well, your mind is working without the input of the 5 senses. There's no physical things to distract you or tie you to the physical dimensions. Space is not a void. It's totally filled with energy. And so once you're no longer, let's say, mentally tethered to your physical body, you are wherever your thoughts are. There's no time and space in the fourth dimension. So you're seeing or sensing with your psychic body, what we call a psychic body, a psychic anatomy, your soul, your spirit, whatever you want to call it. And we're actually surrounded all the time with the same things during waking state, but since most people don't acknowledge the existence or reality of anything that they can't see or prove with their 5 senses, they're unaware of them, kind of like radio and TV signals. You know, they're constantly around you going through your house, etc. But unless you turn on a radio or TV receiver, you're not conscious of them. So their reality is only perceived, you know, as physical when they're awake. So all of a sudden, sorry, let me undo that phone. All of a sudden, you know, we're exposed to all these things that we don't acknowledge as reality in our conscious waking physical life.
Thank you. That was very deep and insightful. We could do a whole show just on your answer that you gave. Maybe we will in the future. And Paula, how about you? To your best understanding, what are dreams?
So dreams are a reflection that is coming from the energy body that Lonnie described. And it is also coming from the various states of consciousness that we all have. We have a superconscious self, which is our positive and progressive self from lifetimes where we have had lived positive lives that has built on our higher self and that super conscious in conjunction with our link and alignment to these higher beings that are make up the God force. And then, or the dream can be coming from our subconscious, which is all the experiences that we've had in our life from birth until this present moment. So the dreams may be related to that. And then the third avenue of dreams that we where the information comes from is our mental conscious self, which is comprised of most of every past life that we've ever lived since we've been a human being. And so dreams are really a reflection of those three states of consciousness.
Wow. So dreams are not something simple, and there's no one answer to what dreams happen to be. They can come from the fourth dimension, and they can come from three different settings in the fourth dimension. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
Well, you are where your thoughts are and what you can conceive. I mean, all kinds of things are constantly going around us in the physical as well as in dream state, and we're only aware of what we're conscious of. You know, like, for example, in one of the things that came to me, it's just like dreams or when you go to sleep, it's like a preview of death. And you're, you know, immediately surrounded by, well, we're surrounded by the same things, but you're not conscious of it because our conscious mind is focused on what we're familiar with, the third dimensional things that we can, you know, perceive with our five senses, and that's what we consider reality. But all the other stuff that's in the fourth dimension and other dimensions is constantly around us, and, you know, when we don't have anything to distract us anymore from, like we do with the physical, you know, we can decide immediately, I'm going to go eat, I'm going to go to a movie, I'm going to do something else, right? And you can distract your consciousness. But if there's nothing to distract your consciousness physically, and you don't know how to change it when you're in dream state, when you're, you know, outside of physical reality, if that's all you know, then it can be a hell world. It can be a heaven. You know, it depends on your own spiritual evolution and state of consciousness and what you're aware of.
That's a very good point, because I know very many people who are positive people, and I know many people who you could say that they're negative, and they're living very similar realities, but they're living in hell or heaven according to their inclination to view the world a certain way. So I find that to be very true over the years. And Paula, do you have anything to
say? I just would say that this world is a dual world of duality, and unless you're highly advanced spiritually, it's hard to always stay in that heaven state, because we're constantly being stimulated by things in our environment that are causing us to react positively or negatively, and oftentimes it's negative, inducing anger, greed, jealousy, you know, whatever that lower emotion is. But that's a clue to something we need to work on within ourselves. This earth is a school of life and lessons.
That it most certainly is, and that brings me to my next question. If dreams are so important, and I believe that they are, why are they sometimes so difficult to remember? And if you remember them, why are they so difficult to understand at times?
Well, as far as remembering, we're daily consciously reinforcing our waking thoughts to the things that we're familiar with and we've accepted as reality, quote unquote. People don't have a full awareness or don't accept at all that the majority of their thoughts and reactions are all formed from hundreds or thousands of their own past lifetimes. So when these, which are their own thoughts, surface in dream state, they seem unrelated or new or foreign, or doesn't matter if they're good or bad. You know, as I said, it's all concept. but, you know, they don't recognize them as their own thoughts. And actually, I was thinking, as far as the prior question as well, we're constantly, even in physical reality, our perception is based on all of those, you know, past life experiences, you know, how we decide to react to something. Are we fearful of it? Do we immediately love it? Do we hate it? Are we defensive? Whatever, you know, it's, and people don't realize, you know, unless they're students, metaphysical students, that all of those reactions are, you know, from experiences that they've had throughout these different lifetimes that are forming how they view something, you know, how they should react to whatever it is they're viewing. So, well, as I said, in conscious waking state, you can change that. But in when you are outside of the physical in the fourth dimensional state, in your dream state, that is your reality. Those thoughts are your reality. You can't just suddenly change it. So that's one of the reasons they're difficult, because people don't accept that. Like my father, I've mentioned many times, he, you know, one life to live. So it's like none of this stuff makes sense. He's like living this dream that's not reality, because, you know, he died. So, you know, how could this be real? And so, again, it's that hell world. And then as far as most people, as I said, they're not aware of these things, but to decipher, again, if you knew about all your past lives and all the experiences you had gone through, then they wouldn't be so strange. You could place them. That's what we try and do in waking state as a student. And that's why we have past life therapy, so that we can place the reactions that we have to something. And again, they may seem totally unreal and strange. It's like, well, you know, this involved a spaceship. We don't have spaceships like that. Well, yeah, we did in past lifetimes. And you had a lot of different experiences, probably mostly negative on them. But, you know, you don't remember them. You don't consciously remember them. So you could be having these nightmares with it. Or, you know, again, they can be positive as well. But, you know, most people wouldn't even want to consciously remember a nightmare, right? You want to forget it. You know, it's scary.
But still,
so, in other words, the short answer is, if you knew about all your past lives, mm-hmm. it would be very easy to place, you know, where these thoughts are coming from and why you're having them that occur in your dream that seem disconnected or disjointed or strange.
But since we mostly can't unless we work on it, that's why they seem disjointed and strange. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Paula?
Well, I would say that the reasons dreams are so important is it's another tool to understand who we are. And the reason it's so difficult to remember is that many people don't pay attention to their dreams. Or like Lonnie said, you want to forget when you have a nightmare. And then the other thing is that when we wake up, oftentimes that dream within minutes is dissipated. We can't consciously, even those of us that are interested in it. But it takes practice to develop the ability to remember the dreams. And so a dream journal is really important to have by your nightstand, so that when you wake up from a dream, especially if it seems something significant, write it down, write the date down. And you may not be able to decipher it in that moment, but the spiritual guides that are working with you and you and your quest want to understand it will help you come to the answer. And so a dream journal is really, really important. And I try to write down the dreams that I think are significant and have a purpose. And even when they don't have a purpose, I've had examples of where I've written a dream down, and then maybe a year later it happened, and then I didn't remember dreaming about it, and I went and looked at my dream journal, and there was, I'll just give you the example.
Sure.
So years ago, I was driving a school bus, and in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and in this this lot where all the buses are coming in for the morning. It's hundreds of buses. And there was this golden dog that looked like a retriever. And I noticed a bus driver go up and pet it. And then a man came up. She was a female. The tail went between the dog's legs. And I could tell right away that, you know, she'd been abused by men. And then they walked away from her. And so I took it upon myself to take her in. And I don't remember how much later it was, maybe a year or so, when I was reviewing my dream journal. 6 months before I found her, I had a dream about this dog that looked just like her. And I woke up crying because in the dream I became aware that these drug addicts and drug dealers had been abusing her, and I was crying because of the abuse she was receiving. And I woke up, and I didn't even remember that dream until a year or two after I rescued her. And so it's important to write those dreams down, because you may not know what it means in that moment, but you might later down the road.
That is a very good point. I've had dreams too that were prophetic, and sometimes the circumstances that I dreamed of earlier were important, and other times they didn't seem to be, but they happened nonetheless as I dreamed them. I think keeping a dream journal is a wonderful tool, and I find, as well as keeping a dream journal, is intending to remember your dream and to remind yourself when you get up to go to the restroom, or, you know, for whatever reason at night. The first thing you should do is try to recall a dream. And I found that even if it's just like a word or two or a mood or something, whatever you recall, write it down. Sometimes it comes back to you later on, sometimes the same day, sometimes days later. But thank you. That's an excellent tool. And thank you for sharing your dream. And Lonnie, what's
Thank
your
you.
Favorite technique for working on remembering dreams?
Well, I try to lay in bed when I wake up, you know, like when I wake up from a dream, and go around with the meaning in my mind without opening my eyes, without moving, without stop myself from starting to think about anything else. Just go around with, well, what do I think that means? Before it's the hypnopompic state, before you wake up. So you're not totally awake yet, but to start going around with, what do I think that means? And then, you know, a couple of tools is, you can have a voice recorder, any kind, whether it's your phone or an iPod or something else, where you can just grab. I mean, it's so easy nowadays. You know, you can just grab it if it's beside your bed and hit record, and voice anything that you remember at that time, and then you can kind of make more sense of it later, or just keep it going while you're going around with it, while you just talk aloud. If you can't do that, you can write them down immediately in your journal, your dream journal that Paula was talking about. But I find, you know, in that state, right before I wake up and while the dream is still fresh, you know, I can get some of the best insights of what does it really mean before I forget, you know, the details. How did I feel about what was going on?
Yes, the hypnagogic and the hypnopompic. Hypnagogic is when you're going from waking to sleeping, and then hypnopompic is when you're going from sleeping to waking. Those liminal states are of great importance. And I found that when I focus on remembering those, I have some of the most remarkable experiences in them. Some of the reading that I've done, and I believe it's true, demonstrate that a lot of spiritual experiences or visionary experiences or encounters with other entities happen in the hypnagogic and the hypnopompic. I haven't in all my years been able to tell the difference between the hypnagogic and the hypnopompic. They seem like the same state to me, like an in-between place between more familiar.
Yeah, I don't know why they have to give it two different names. Yeah, but yeah, it's similar. But and then again, you could say that. Well, I don't know if you can, but that, like Dr. Norman, when he was channeling, because he was never in a trance, he was always conscious of what was going on, but it wasn't like a typical. You know, like you're walking around and you're having breakfast or what, although he could do that too. he could channel it while he was doing anything. But I would say that, you know, you have a different attunement with a different dimension while you're in that state. And to me, it would be a little bit different than your dream state, because now you have some form of consciousness where you're trying to be objective about it, about at least if you're analyzing your dream. If you're in that state of analysis, then you're at least partially conscious. You're not just you know, floating out there in the astral with no control over what you're going through.
Those are very good points. Thank you, Lonnie. And Paula, do you have anything to add to that?
No, but I just want to thank her for sharing her exercise that she does, laying there and recalling, you know, all of those details while she's still laying down before even getting up. I like that technique, and I'm going to try it myself.
Now,
and I'll just say one thing really quick. The more effort that we make in trying to remember our dreams, the more we're going to remember them, because we've got that practice in place of repetition and conscious intent on that.
And going along with what she said, when I was trying to recall all my dreams, they got so numerous, it's just like, well, I'm
yes.
going to be spending all my time writing them, you know, so then I would just kind of go out of that phase. But, yeah, when I was consciously trying to remember all my dreams, wanting to, and write them down, you know, I could remember almost all of them.
I've had that experience as well. Some dreams I'd remember as many as 15 dreams, but then it became I was spending my days recording.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Now, in terms of understanding, I've done what you've done, you know, just basically pre-associating while in like a meditative state when I'm in the waking up part of the hypnagogic, hypnopompic process. Another technique that I learned from Carl Jung that works really well, although it's kind of strange to work with in the beginning, is called active imagination. And that's where you, in your mind, you start dialoguing with dream characters. And you ask them, what are they trying to tell you? And I found that a lot of really surprising and insightful information comes from that. It's hard to do in the beginning because it sounds like you're talking to yourself. It feels like it. And you are, in a sense. But you can get some really good answers from doing that.
One of the things, we talked a little bit about dreams in a class that I facilitated the other night. And one of the things that you know William, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he was relating a dream about this. He was on a hilltop, and he was, and he's related several different versions that are similar to this. But he was listening to a dog that was growling and barking, and some I don't know, building down below in the valley. And when he went down there, and he got closer and inside, and he could feel and hear. It was dark, but he could feel and hear the dog getting closer and closer, and you know, this snarling and growling and all that stuff. And then he recognized, and I knew it before he said it, but he recognized that it was his own lower self. So yeah, so if we are on the spiritual pathway of progressive evolution, and we're never alone. We always have spiritual guides and teachers that are working with us. And if we're aware of them and in tune with them, you know, even though we're having negative experiences or nightmares or stuff, they can help us, too, to remember and to recognize what it is that we're looking at. I mean, just like in conscious and waking state, you know, they're working with us. Well, the same thing. They don't, like, abandon us just because we go to sleep. You know, so if we're aware of them, and that's also true. I don't know. Did you ever read any of the Celestine Prophecy books?
Years ago, when they
okay,
just come out, and they're very popular.
Tenth Insight. Anyway, yeah, they had, you know, like soul groups too that were functioning in a way similar to what we talk about, the brothers and sisters on the inner higher fourth dimensional planes. like spirit guides, angels, whatever you want to call them, that they're always working with you. It's, but you have to be open to them. So if you're open to them, whether it's in the dream state or when you're analyzing them afterwards, you know, they can help you the same way they can in conscious state to project some pictures or images or information if you're asking questions. And that's another aid to your remembering your dreams, too. You know, if you really want to know, if you don't want to shut it out because it was just too scary or too negative or too whatever it is, if you're a student, you choose student on the pathway, you just say, hey, you know, I'm not quite getting this image, whether you write it in your journal, your dream journal, your regular journal, you just pose that mental question, and they'll help you. You know, that's what they're there for, is to help mankind.
Yes, I can vouch for that with a spirit I met through Unarius, through reading Unarius' books on Atlantis. Herodotus, who's accounted to be the first historian, and he's popped up a lot of times and explained very obscure and puzzling things to me about his writings, the histories, or he's pointed me in the right direction very, very many times. So I know they're always working with us, and their insight is phenomenal, because I wouldn't have gotten to read it on my own.
It's kind of like we're separating, well, you know, like there's the dream state and then there's the real, you know, physical state. But it's just like it's all one, you know, it's just whether you're where your consciousness is. It is your consciousness anchored by, you know, all of the input that we're familiar with of our five senses, or is it unanchored to this physical body because we're not receiving that five sense input? But they're still there. You know, they haven't gone anywhere. It hasn't changed for them. So, you know, we can ask for help if we need it. Like one of the experiences I had was when I was sleeping, and I often sleep on my side or not quite down faced, but sometimes like my face is just off the pillow, to the edge of one side of the pillow. Well, it turned out one night I had it too close to my pillow, or however the pillow was shaped or whatever, but I was actually suffocating. My mouth and nose were both covered by the pillow, and I was suffocating. And you know that feeling when you're in a dream where you can't move?
Yes.
You know, when you're trying to get away from something? Well, it was the same thing, but physically. I couldn't move my body, and I knew I was suffocating, and I just called out to Uriel. You know, it's like, help me, help me. I can feel it now. And she woke me up immediately. But, you know, had that not happened, I could have just died in my bed because I couldn't move. That's like I knew I was suffocating and I couldn't move my body. So they're all, the point being, they're always there. You know, they're a thought away, you know, whether you're awake or asleep in dream state. It's just your awareness of them.
So working with dreams is a spiritual path that's a valid one, and it produces very deep experiences, deep insights, and deep understandings. Now,
you're making a statement, or
no? I'm just summarizing to make sure that I understood everything that was being communicated. Now, some people are able to produce, and we've had prophetic dreams, and we've all shared some of our prophetic dreams tonight and on other occasions. Is there a way to cultivate prophetic dreams so that you can have them more predictably?
Well, I would personally like to be in the classrooms on the inner planes all the time, you know, every night. But one of the things that influences you is, you know, what thoughts do you go to bed with? And I have a bad habit of often watching, you know, like a movie or TV or something, you know, to relax before I go to sleep, you know. So where's my consciousness? My consciousness is often with, you know, whatever I was watching, all of that input for however long I was doing it, versus, you know, if I'm studying before I go to bed and I'm attuned with the inner planes and the master teachers and all that stuff, then, you know, I can be in that fourth dimension in that class where there is no time and space. I can see past, present, and future, just like the title of this session tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, so... it's all up to you where your consciousness is. But yes, when you're in that, and I can talk about more details about that in later. But when you're in that state of consciousness, in fact, you know, in whatever 15 minutes, a half hour, you can have your whole life go before you. And also knowing the energy principle that the past repeats itself unless it's changed. So if you haven't changed, again, well, first of all, you have to know that you've had many, many past lifetimes and all the things you did, both good and bad, but, you know, as students, we're working the bad ones. Well, if you haven't changed those, they're just going to keep reoccurring in your future lives. So there you are. There's your prophecy. All of those things that are part of you that you haven't wanted to recognize, that you've buried maybe because it's not a nice part of yourself, you know, those things are going to repeat themselves in the future over and over and over again until you change them. And the same thing for the good things, you know, like if you've done music all your life, or you've, you know, whatever else that you've worked on of a positive nature, that's also going to regenerate in some way in your future life. So, you know, you can, that's kind of an easy way to say that you can prophesy the future just by that principle, energy principle.
That's a very good point, and you also hit the nail right on the head when you talked about that you dream where your mind is. I find that if I want to dream about something, I'll preoccupy myself with it for, like, excessively, and then my dreams will take me there, and it'll continue in the dream. And that works also like if you binge watch a TV show or a series of movies. If it's the same characters and situations, that'll wind up in your dream as well.
Yeah.
So that, I found that that's how I try to seed my dreams and have them give insight or experience on a variety of topics. Paula, do you have a technique that you use?
Well, I don't have a technique, but I have a comment on understanding those prophetic dreams, or where it comes from, or why it happens. And I think for some people that aren't necessarily on a spiritual path like we are, you hear from people every day or often that, you know, they had a dream that this relative was going to die and that relative died. And maybe one person has dreamt about multiple members of the family that's going to die that came to pass. And what I feel is for some of those people, they already have somewhat of a psychic ability, and they're able to carry that over into the dream state to have a prophetic dream. And then in other cases, I think also that these spiritual, advanced spiritual beings that are working with us will help project that dream to us for whatever purpose it is, to prepare them for that death or whatever the reason, they project, help us to be receivers for whatever that prophecy is, for a purpose, for a lesson.
And this could be a lesson that's privately for the individual who makes the request, and also for someone they're inquiring about, or for something that would normally be outside their circle of influence.
Yes, or even you may not know, like in 1980, when I was part of Yogananda's group, I had this dream about a man, and in the dream I knew he had an important role to play in my life. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know it was a prophetic dream, but after that, I tried to date only men that looked like him. And then in 1982, the second time I ever came to a Unarius class, it was a flame ceremony, and that man was there, and he was wearing exactly what he wore in my dream in 1980. So, you know, sometimes we may not even know that it's something from the future until it manifests. But I believe it was a tool and a lesson. It was something I needed to be aware of. The unknown reason to me, but I was aware of it, and I probably wrote that dream down.
I had something similar when I was still relatively young, and I was involved in psychic work. I was a deep trance medium, and like Ernest Norman, I didn't have to be in a deep trance, but that's how I learned to enter these other states. So that's the primary function that I served in the spiritual group. But my Atlantean teacher had told me in a meditation session that somebody very important to my life had entered my life. And I was thinking about all the people who recently entered my life. And, you know, although everybody is important and I appreciate everybody I come in contact with, I couldn't really think of anybody who was entering my life in a life-changing way. And I questioned it, and they reinforced, and he was joined by some other teachers, and reinforced that, yes, somebody very important to my life had entered my life, and that I'm aware of them. So I thought about this, and I couldn't identify anybody. And for years, I couldn't identify anybody. And then when I connected with Athena, during that time when I was told this, I had a magazine, like a fanzine type of magazine, a non-professional magazine. And Athena used to write for the magazine, I found out. And then when we discussed it further, we crossed paths several times who could identify, but didn't really know that we were there for each other. But it all made sense. Again, like many things, when you're dealing with a spirit, in retrospect, it makes perfect sense. But while it's happening, it often doesn't.
Yeah.
Now, how about the phenomenon of lucid dreams? I've experimented with those, and those are amazing. Once I was riding a train. It was one of the elevated trains to go from Manhattan into Queens in New York City. And then I realized that I was dreaming. So I was with my friends. We were working in the hospital at the time in the Department of Psychiatric Rehabilitation. So I told them, hey, you know, we're in a dream. And they're, of course, saying, no, we're not in a dream. And I said, yes, yes, we're in a dream. And I said, watch this. And I made the train, like, fly up through the air and zoom around like a jet and then land on the tracks again. And then I woke up. So I realized that I was dreaming, and it felt like reality. It felt like real reality. There wasn't anything other than the fact that I made a train fly that would have betrayed that I wasn't in the waking state. But you pretty much do whatever comes into your mind as long as you don't get so excited by doing it that you wake up right away, and that happens quite a lot. How can we best use lucid dreams? Or do you have a technique for inducing lucid dreams?
Well, I've had it a few times, you know, realizing that I was dreaming and that there was no time and space, and so I didn't have to walk to get it somewhere or otherwise travel someplace. I could instantaneously be there by simply thinking of that place. I knew that, and then I recognized it. I recognized it, you know, like in waking state, but then I recognized it in dream state as well. So one of the things, there was a repeated sequence that I had where I was flying in the night, but I had to navigate between telephone and other wires in order to reach free space. And once I thought about this after I woke up and I realized, you know, okay, there's no time and space, and I didn't have to go through the wires. I could envision myself on the other side of the wires or wherever I wanted to go. And so then the next time it happened in a dream, that's what I did. But on the other hand, I mean, just another thought, if you're consciously trying to control a dream, then it's really no better than trying to consciously control your physical life. You'll get similar results that aren't really helping you in your spiritual evolution. The point is to learn from the dreams and from life and to tune into infinite creative intelligence, the higher frequencies, the inner, et cetera, so that you get a more expanded progressive viewpoint, you know, versus doing more of the same things that didn't work in waking life.
Those are good points. Paula, what are your thoughts?
Well, lucid dreams are very fascinating, and I know earlier in my spiritual path, there were books on how to have lucid dreams, and I never practiced it, and I probably haven't had very many lucid dreams, but as a psychotherapist, working with soldiers with combat PTSD, I decided to try and use that lucid dream as a therapeutic technique for them to change the outcome of their dream. You know, like if they were in an IED and many of their men were killed, or, you know, they were injured or something traumatic happened, then I would explain to them, you know, how to relax before you go to bed and try to consciously ask for the intentions to change the outcome of the dream. I didn't have a whole lot of success with that technique, but that's one avenue that some people in the mental health field utilize.
Thank you. But you haven't had success with that, using that particular technique?
No, I didn't.
I found that what works the best, like with remembering a dream or dwelling on a dream, is to immerse myself in the idea of having that type of dream, a lucid dream, and then imagining, you know, what it would feel like to have a lucid dream. And another technique I found very useful is to question which state of reality you're in throughout the day. And like, for instance, it's very difficult for some things to stay static during a dream, like, for instance, writing. So if you check for something in writing, and then you look at it and then look away from it and look back at it, if you're in a dream, it's likely to have changed. The same thing with your fingers. You know, if you look at your hand and your fingers and then look away and look back at it, sometimes your hand is different. You have extra fingers and not enough fingers. So that's a good indication that you're dreaming. And another technique I found very useful is to have a trigger thing. Like I have because one of my totems is a lion, I have a stuffed lion on my dresser. So every time I see a lion, I ask myself if I'm dreaming or if I'm awake. So I don't see very many lion things throughout the day, but if I do, it's another call to question my reality. And sometimes in the hypnagogic and the hypnopompic, like for instance, there's a false awakening if you're working with dreams, where you think you got up and wrote down your dream. You could swear you did that, but then there's nothing written in your notebook or nothing on your recorder. So that shows you how real some of the luminal states can be. So I've always found that those type of techniques work best when trying to induce that. Now, how does Unarius explain the phenomenon of people sharing the same dream, like, or entering each other's dreams?
Well, you since it's in the astral dimension, non-physical dimension, if you, whatever you're in tune with, I mean, if you're in tune with that person's reality, dream state reality, going back to, I mentioned Celestine Prophecy, there was one called The Tenth Insight. It was like the following book.
A
chapter. Huh?
Yeah, the sequel book, I remember.
Yeah, the sequel. And there was a chapter called An Inner Hell. And it was this town, and it was a state of consciousness of the characters in there, and they were playing out. It was almost like a Western, you know, where they shoot or knife or, you know, distress and all that stuff. And it was like in the middle of nowhere in space, you know, but it was created, you know, it only went so far, and then it kind of like grayed out, you know, because it was their consciousness only that was forming this. But it just kept repeat, you know, it would play out, you know, they would kill each other, they would die, and then it would reset, and it would just keep playing out over and over and over again. It was like a you know, loop in the minds of these people that were participating in this dream. And the protagonist found himself in this town, you know, and talking to these characters. But, you know, as long as he had emotional reactions to these characters, you know, he was involved with them, he had fear, He had other emotions. You know, that locked him in to their, you could say it's their dream, to their what they were going around with in their heads during this this state. Now, whether they were dead or whether they were dreaming, you know, I don't know. I don't know if they identified that, but it was just going on and on. And then he tried to escape, and he went into, it was like an opium den, and he went into a few other places, you know, but he ended up coming back to the same town. And it was just like, without the help of his friends and people that were outside of that dream states, and whether they were friends, spirit guides, whatever, that were able to see where he was and send him, you know, light and energy and stuff, you know, he wasn't able to get out of that. You know, he was part of their dream state or that scenario that they had created mentally with their thoughts.
So now, actually, they got the Celestine prophecy to reread it.
Well, that was, again, that was in the 10th Insight, yeah, the following book.
Sequel. Now, that happened in waking life also. When I used to teach in a psychiatric hospital, I used to get student interns, and I used to run internship programs. I would spend some time, basically teaching them how projection works. And how, in many cases, we cast our own movies and we have them running in loops until we can, you know, get out of the loop that we're stuck in. And
yeah.
I would tell people that one way you could do it is when somebody starts talking about all people, like all men are this, all women are this, all teachers are this, all students are this, all Greeks are this, all Americans are this, you know, they're no longer in reality. They're generalizing, and they're casting certain people in a certain role. And people usually have relationship issues or employment issues where they continuously find themselves in the same situation over and over and over. And their conclusion is that the world is that way, but it's not.
Yeah.
Their consciousness is that way.
Yeah. Yep. Breaking out of that loop, that's the difficulty.
Yeah,
you know, and that's where we're lucky if, you know, if you're open to, you know, help from the higher beings. Otherwise, you know, you're going backwards. If you're not going forwards, you're going backwards. And if you keep repeating the same negative sequence over and over, it's not just that simple negative sequence. Each time you repeat it, you're amplifying it. You're adding to it, which is like, you know, dragging you down. So, worse state.
As soon as I become aware of these loops, I say, no, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, good.
Stop it right there, because otherwise you'll live out the story again, and it'll reinforce what you believe is happening, and it's always somebody else's fault, and it has nothing to do with your psychology, and it just keeps going over and over and over again.
Getting worse.
Yeah.
Amplifying, you know, and that's one of the things that happens with, you know, wars and everything, where people talk to each other and they just amplify their fears or their angers or whatever, and it escalates. And find other people that agree with them.
Oh, I learned that by being Greek, because Greeks and Turks do not get along, or didn't get along back when I was growing up, and they had a long history of not getting along. So when I grew up, the Turks were evil. They would kill pregnant women and dash babies' brains against the wall, and they would do all these horrible things. So, you know, all I wanted to do was fight the Turks, because Turks shouldn't be allowed to get away with this. And then later on in life, I befriended some Turks, and I found that they're told the same stories about the Greeks. And much the same reaction. The Greeks shouldn't be allowed to get away with this. You know, they have to be stopped. So it's these stories that are presented to you, and that they repeat because people believe them and don't look into them, and then they're stuck in these loops of conflict for generations and generations.
Until
something stops.
And you see it all around you in the world and in the news and everything else.
Lonnie, what are your thoughts on projection and living in loops and...
Oh, well, I wanted to say before we ran out of time, I think you wanted to hear our most profound dream experiences. I know I want to hear yours and Paula's.
Okay, great. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. So my most profound dream experience was a dream that I had with Uriel and the moderator. Most of my dreams that I've had with Uriel, it was just Uriel. And this particular dream, I don't remember the details, but and the reason it's so profound to me is because the moderator was there too. And he, in the dream, he was asking me my opinion on something. He was wanting to create a new building or a new teaching, or not a teaching, but something that has to do with Unaries. He wanted to create something new for it. I don't recall the details of what it was. Of course, when I woke up, I remembered those details. But it meant so much to me that that I had this dream and that I was receptive to both of them. And I will never forget that experience. And when I woke up in the morning, I was so transcended and out of my body because I had touched the energies of those two master beings whose frequency is so much higher than mine and anyone on Earth. It was very special and meaningful.
Wow. I'm glad you had that experience.
Thank you.
And Lonnie?
In order to understand the significance of my dream experience, I need to tell you about the most traumatic period of my life. I was about 14 when my father asked my mother for a divorce. She loved him still and did not agree, but eventually he was so unhappy that she did so to please him. And then once the divorce was finalized, he married her best friend. At that point, she developed breast cancer. Oh, it gets better and better, so just save your ooze.
Oh.
At that point, she developed breast cancer. She was a Christian Scientist and never used medicine nor had a doctor, so she lived without painkillers. And as the disease progressed, she had to stop working, and the only steady income was alimony payments. And while where we lived was not zoned for subletting, she had allowed some people to live on the property and made arrangements so that they could pay the utility bills instead. Unfortunately, they were flaky, and several times our phone or electricity was turned off due to non-payment. And so one day she told me, and remember, I'm like 14, 15, right? I could commit suicide, or I could devote myself to the world. That's a heavy thing to lay on your daughter.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Luckily, she chose the latter. And as for me, she was requiring more and more help, and my brothers had moved out, so I was her sole caregiver. So I took summer classes and graduated high school early, and eventually it took all my time. I lost my boyfriend, other school friends, gained weight due to stress eating. And while she was the sweetest patient, in spite of the increasing pain she had, I resented the loss of my own time and freedom to do what I wanted. So anyway, getting to what happened in the dream state, I woke up in the middle of the night. It wasn't like a typical dream, but I woke up in the night, and suddenly everything about that time period was clear. I'd had a lot of realizations over the years as a Unary student of different aspects of the trauma, but suddenly I saw everything connected in a whole integrated picture. And I knew that I'd been in a class on the inner that night. And here's what it was. In a past life, my mom in this lifetime was also married to my dad, but at that time I was the other woman, you know, like her best friend in this lifetime. And in both lifetimes, he was very handsome, athletic, didn't smoke, drink, etc., and I seduced him. However, she, in that lifetime, did commit suicide, and she shot herself in the breast, which is what it showed up as breast cancer in this lifetime. So, of course, you know, after that happened, she shot herself, you know, she got cancer and stuff. I felt very guilty about it all. So before I incarnated in this lifetime, I set it up with the help of my spiritual teachers on the inner to try and work out that karmic situation that I had created. So even though I wasn't consciously remembering that after I incarnated, I found myself on the receiving end of the energy that I had put out in destroying their marriage for my own selfish purposes, and I had to take care of her, so that I was on the other end of it now. So she, on the other hand, she accomplished her goal of not committing suicide in this lifetime when the triangle happened again. It wasn't me this time, but the triangle happened again. And she, what was cool, she didn't resent or condemn either my father or her best friend. So when she passed on, I was happy that she'd fulfilled what she set out to do and was rid of that painful body. As for me, I didn't do as well as she did with the challenge. After she passed, I ended up living with my father. My stepmother got a really strong self-reflection from both of them. But I remained shell-shocked, critical, low self-esteem for a long, long time. I actually relived and repeated that past life to a certain extent. But luckily, I found the inner science before I got myself killed. And then I kept slowly learning more about myself and working to change the negative waveforms in my psychic. Now, knowing what I know, having seen the bigger picture, you know, that where I was in the classrooms that night, I'm grateful for that total experience, as traumatic as it was at the time. It motivated me to look for answers, to grow, and actually work on what I had set it up to work out before incarnating versus continuing to repeat and strengthen the past. So that, to me, was the most profound dream experience I have. Even though it wasn't a dream that I remembered, I knew from how I woke up in that hypnopompic state, you know, where I had been. Otherwise, I would never have had that information, you know, so clearly, so completely.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That is deeply personal and powerful.
Yep.
I don't have anything traumatic to share, but my most profound experiences were ones that revealed that reality isn't what we think it is. And in my youth, when I was, I guess, a teenager, I used to have dreams that I went to classes. It was a huge amphitheater, and I used to call it the amphitheater of dreams. But it was very much like a college campus. And while I studied there, I met other people, people my own age, who also were taking classes there. So after we became aware of this, we made it a point to remember what we were learning, and then we would talk about what we learned in these dream classes in among ourselves during lunch at school. And that's happened numerous times. And as I grew older, I was teaching in these classes, and I would still occasionally meet people who would call me by my dream name and my title. So that's pretty profound and helped shape my life. And we only have a minute left. I would like for you guys to share how people can find Unarius, because Unarius is a positive force in the world, and it's helped all of us.
Well, the easiest place to go with the most information is Unarius's website, which is Unarius, unarius.org. And there, like at the top of the page of the website, you can click on Facebook. We have Instagram. We have Vimeo. We have stuff on YouTube. So all of those other things on the internet you can do. But then we also have like your podcast archived. We have our own podcasts archived. We have where student testimonials. We also have a cable program still. You know, like people think, oh, that they aired a bunch of programs on TV in the 80s. No, we're still sending them out to stations. So you can find like a TV guide kind of page on the website as well. So that's a good place to start. You can call UNARIS's number. We have a local number in here in San Diego County, and then we have a free number, and you can find those as well. We have classes Wednesdays and Sundays. Wednesday night, we Zoom them only. Sunday night, you can Zoom from wherever you are in the world, or if you're here in San Diego area, you can come to our classes live. They're from our time, Pacific time, 7 to 8:30 every Wednesday and Sunday. We have a annual event in October, the second weekend in October, called Interplanetary Confederation Day, where we say, we proclaim we're not alone in the universe, and that's a two-day event. The first day is free. So lots and lots of ways. You can look in events on our webpage, and that will tell you more about that.
Thank you so very much. Paula, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that was perfect. But I just want to add one real quick thing. The documentary is being shown throughout different locations in the United States, and you can go to the website on the events and see where they're located and what day and what time, where people can go watch at a theater the documentary in your location.
Thank you so very much. I wish we had more time. I know I'll miss you by the time we talk again. I'll miss you as soon as we get off the air, actually. Thank you for a wonderful conversation and for a lot of wisdom and insight. I wish you well in these and all your future endeavors.
Thank you for
being such a great host.
Thank you. And to our wonderful audience, thanks for listening. Everyone have a blessed day.
Good night.